Hello and welcome to the Home is Where the Hearth Is podcast on the Inner Sanctum. And whereas with the other podcasts, we have a sort of set theme, revisiting old favourites, where I revisit old favourites. Have for many weeks, I think it's 43 weeks now, we've been on the path to Rome with Hilaire Belloc, almost a year. And it's great fun, especially today's episode, which I've just finished reading, by the way, which is just wonderful, rumbustious, great humour, funny, very funny. So if you've not been in the habit of following us on the path to Rome, you don't have to go back to the beginning and take the long trudge, the long haul. You can join us where we are, which is somewhere in the Apennines in Italy, by listening to this week's Path to Rome. And also the other regular podcast, of course, is the Poem of the Week, which, as it would suggest, it's slightly misnamed because it's very rarely Poem of the Week. It's usually Poems of the Week. I like the podcast to last, somewhere around 15 minutes. So if the poems are very short, we have several. And this week we were celebrating the finding of the cross. So two poems about the cross, one poem about the Blessed Virgin for the Marian month of May, which we're just embarking upon. And then a little tribute to Belloc by myself, a couple of short poems I wrote in tribute to Belloc in my one published volume of poetry. So anyway, that's just to keep you up to speed on the other podcasts in case you are not in the habit of listening to them. But on the Home is Where the Hearth Is podcast, it's everything else. I just wax, hopefully eloquent, on something or other, this, that, or the other, all things considered, as Chesterton would say, or on something or on nothing, as Belloc would say, titled two volumes of his essays. So whatever takes my fancy. So recently we've done several weeks on chivalry and literature. But what I'm going to talk about today, and for as long as the muse carries me, as far as the muse carries me, is how great books save us from slavery. How great books save us from slavery. Okay, of course, we're living in a cancel culture where they're trying to cancel the great books. Partly on the grounds that somehow or other, for some bizarre reason, the great books are supposed to have led to slavery. Well, I'm going to show you in actual fact how they save us from slavery, and the cancelling of them will lead us back into slavery. So the first thing we have to realise is that every generation, and indeed every person, and every culture, is animated by the degree to which it, he, they, owe their allegiance and act according to one of two spirits, either the Heiligergeist or the Zeitgeist. In other words, either the Holy Spirit or the Spirit of the Age. And all of us, if you like, have to struggle between those two spirits in our daily lives, as we have to struggle between good and evil in our daily lives. And quite frankly, usually they're the same things. In other words, the spirit of the age and the evil are usually synonymous, and the good and the Holy Spirit are always synonymous. So this struggle in every age and in every individual human heart between the Zeitgeist and the Heiligergeist, the spirit of the age or the Holy Spirit, is what we need to be bearing in mind. Chesterton says somewhere that the Catholic Church is the one thing that saves us from the slavery of being a child of our own time. He also says somewhere else that the Catholic Church is the one continuous institution that's been thinking about thinking for 2,000 years. Well, if an institution has been around for 2,000 years, it should be listened to. If it's been thinking for 2,000 years, it should be listened to. And if it's been thinking about thinking for 2,000 years, it should certainly be listened to. It's seen the various philosophies come and go. It's seen the various spirits of the age come and go. There are some prevailing spirits, secularism, for instance, pride, for instance, which are common to all of the spirits of the age. except for those very rare spirits of the age that happen for a usually very short period of time, conform to the Holy Spirit. But those ages are rare, if ever, in fact. Even in the great ages of the saints, they were outnumbered by the sinners and usually and often persecuted by them. Okay, so the most important thing is that the one thing that will save us from the spirit of the age is being able to think beyond it. In other words, outside it. We have to have the ability to think outside the box, and specifically the ability to think outside the ideological box, the box that encapsulates whatever the latest fads and fashions of the world are. So, for instance, if you were living in England in the 16th century or the United States in the 16th and 17th century, you would have found that the pervading spirit was that of Puritanism, and Puritanism prevailed. But now, of course, if you were to speak or act like a 16th or 17th century Puritan, you would be treated as odd, to say the least, and certainly not tolerated by the spirit of the age. If you lived in France in the 18th century, you would have been a late 18th century, 1780s and 1790s, you would have been filled first of all with a revolutionary spirit, and then with a terror of the revolutionary spirit unleashed. The revolution of 1789 leading to the Great Terror, the Reign of Terror that followed in its wake, and the weapon of mass destruction, especially invented to kill civilians of one's own people, the guillotine. But again, the ideas of the French Revolution, much more in fact than the ideas of Puritanism, have prevailed, and much of the spirit of progressivism is a hangover from the spirit of the French Revolution. And incidentally, the very idea of left and right in politics is a hangover of the French Revolution. It's only since we've been talking about right and left that we've forgotten about right and wrong where politics is concerned, and that's one of the big problems. But going from the so-called left of the French Revolution to the so-called right of the British Empire, if you lived in Britain in the 19th century, you would have seen the rise of British power globally. The first official globalism was the British Empire, the empire that it was said upon which the sun never set, because somewhere always the sun was shining on some part of the world owned, controlled, ruled by the British Empire, most of that 19th century under the reign of Queen Victoria, who, as well as being the Queen of the United Kingdom, was also Empress of India, believe it or not. Almost one third of the land area of the world under the reign of the British Empire. If you read works written in Britain during the latter half of the 19th century, it's full of the triumphalist presumption of British superiority. And 1897, with the Diamond Jubilee celebrations for Queen Victoria, after she'd been on the throne for 60 years, it would have been easy to believe that the British would rule the world forever. That was the spirit of the age. Of course, the reality was very different. And if you walk around sounding like Rudyard Kipling today or some major from the British Empire, you will be lampooned and not taken very seriously. Such is the transience of the spirit of the age. The 20th century, by the way, if anything, was if you want to call the French Revolution left wing, if you must use such silly language, and the British Empire as conservative right wing, if you must use such silly language, then the 20th century swung violently, radically, manically, madly, from left to right, in fact, in both directions. Because the 20th century was the century of totalitarianism, the triumph of tyranny, beginning perhaps with the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917, Then you had the Benito Mussolini's fascists marching on Rome in 1922, the rise of the Nazis and Hitler coming to power in 1933. The Soviet Empire, of course, would last right through to 1991, straddling most of the empire. The communists came to power in China after World War II, and they're still there today. We had the communist terror of Pol Pot in Cambodia and the killing fields. Taken together, communism, fascism, Nazism, worldly secularist, secular fundamentalist, totalitarianism has claimed the lives of well over 100 million civilians. And one other consequence of the 20th century, of course, was this secularism, as well as causing tyranny, in terms of politics, also caused war. It was the century of two world wars and numerous other lesser wars. So you can add tens of millions of further deaths on top of the 100 million or so deaths caused by secular fundamentalist totalitarian ideology. The spirit of the age. God help us and God deliver us from it. So, as I've waxed somewhat on, first of all, the difference between the spirit of the age and the Holy Spirit, Spirit of God, and talked about how the spirit of the age manifests itself across several fairly recent centuries. We're really running out of time for me to wax too much on how the great books will save us from the spirit of the age and save us from the slavery to the spirit of the age, which is the fate of most people in every age, to be slaves of the spirit of their particular age, and to sound somewhat dated and possibly even silly and preposterous to future ages. So we will look in the second of the talks on how great books save us from slavery, with indeed how great books save us from slavery, how great books liberate us from the spirit of the age. So please do join me next week as we continue this discussion in the Home is Where the Hearth is podcast on how great books save us from slavery. Until then, thanks as always for being a member of the Inner Sanctum, and thanks for joining me this week. Please do join me next week. And until then, goodbye and God bless.